From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, right here in Champaign County. We'll hear from Emeritus Agronomist from University of Illinois Extension, Emerson Nafziger, about work that he had done as it's related to nitrogen and its overwintering powers. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and we'll do all of that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org. Click and play at willag.org, or look up the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn for the day settled at $4.30¼. That was 0.75 cents lower. July at $4.41, down a penny and 0.75. And December futures, $4.64¾, 2½ lower. The May soybeans, $11.94½, up 4½ cents. July, $11.64¼, 4¼ higher. And November soybeans, new crop, at $11.61¼, up 2¾ cents. The bean meal futures at $3.38.70, up $3.40 for the day. The bean oil at $45.09 higher. Wheat futures soft red July at $5.52¼, down 12½. The hard red at $5.69, that finished 14 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle down 40 cents for the day. The feeder cattle's off 22½, and lean hogs were down a dime for the afternoon. Crude oil at $82.47. That's per barrel, down $2.36. And the wholesale price of gasoline, 0.4¢ lower at $2.76¢ per gallon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us. He's at the elevator right here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. I was out yesterday, have not been today, but I know producers are in the field, the planters are rolling. Can you tell me about East Central Illinois and what's happening?
Yeah, it seems like we've missed the rains, the forecasted rains. Very little rain fell the last couple of days, and so farmers are taking advantage of that, getting some field work done, some spraying, and even some soybeans have been planted. Have not heard of any corn being planted yet, but there's several fields of soybeans that have gotten planted. And again, we have another chance of rain tomorrow, but we'll see. It seems like we're on the lighter end of all those rains, which I guess at this time of year, that's okay. We don't want to see that continue forever, but the rain seemed to have been happening south of us and then west. Iowa, Nebraska, the Dakotas have been getting some very good rains, and they've been extremely dry. So if anyone should get rain, I guess they're the ones that really need to get it. So as far as our area, immediate area, though, lots of field work starting to get done this week. Hasn't really translated into corn planting, and I'm sure the bean number is less than 10%, but at least we're getting started.
Expectations from the trade probably about normal as it's related to what the crop looks like going into the ground at this time. Certainly, based on what we have seen from the USDA's crop progress reports, that is the case. Otherwise, what's moving the marketplace?
The stronger dollar, for one, is keeping a lid on commodity prices, especially corn and soybeans. Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve Board, said that higher interest rates may be here for longer than what was originally thought. Ever since those kind of comments have been coming out 2-3 weeks ago, the dollar has rallied from about 102, 103, all the way up to 106. And a strong dollar makes our exports more expensive. And so as a result, exports have been lagging, especially soybeans. The other thing that the market is watching, not sure how what they're going to do about it, but the big discrepancy between USDA and CONAB's numbers. USDA is about 513 million bushels higher on their corn estimate than what CONAB is, and they're about 311 million bushels higher on soybeans for Brazil than what CONAB is. And at some point in time, a few weeks ago, the thinking was, well, surely they'll come together at some point in time. But there's a little bit of fear or, you know, realization that maybe those USDA and CONAB numbers don't have to meet, that they can just each stake with their own estimate. And unfortunately, a lot of traders trade off the USDA's numbers. And so those are higher numbers. And that's kind of pressuring the soybean market here as well.
And the United States Department of Agriculture again looked back at last year's crop and said, oh, we think we miscalculated that. And they upped that, I believe, in the March or maybe February numbers. They changed those. And so there's just, or maybe it was just the end of the year January figures. I don't recall at the moment off the top of my head. But USDA it appears that it's going to stick to its guns at least at this point for a little bit. So these are the numbers that the marketplace has accepted or will be trading from. How do farmers use them to their advantage, or I suppose, how do they take them into their marketing plans more likely?
That's it. They may not agree with them, but you have to trade the numbers that the USDA releases. And so that's going to keep a lid on prices. We'll have to lower our sights a little bit from what we were hoping for if the USDA would have actually lowered their numbers. Because 500 million bushels of corn and 300 million bushels of beans is a big difference. But if they're not going to come down very much, then the farmers are going to have to adjust their price expectations. And right now, I don't think farmers are too worried about selling anything. They're going to be focused on getting the crop in the field. But once the planting and spraying gets done, then it'll be a return to marketing. And then we'll have to have an idea what they want to do. And like I say, they may have to lower their expectations a little bit.
The NOPA numbers that came out earlier in the week, the crush figures were bigger than expected or on the top end of the range. How much of a difference does that make?
I think the trade expects those each month now with new crushing plants having come online over the last year, year and a half, 2 years, that the crush number will be a record every month for the foreseeable future. So the higher numbers in and of themselves sound friendly, but I think the expectations are already there. So really, it's hard to draw anything bullish out of that because they're going to say we kind of expected the crush numbers to be higher and exports to be lower. And so, you'd like to think that on the surface that those numbers are friendly, but I think a lot of that's already baked in.
At some point, do the products, meal in particular, become burdensome enough that it weighs on the market?
Yeah, the meal, you can't crush soybeans just for the oil, and you got to do something with the meal. Argentina is our main competitor when it comes to exports of soybean meal, so we're going to have to get the price probably down to the Argentine level on soybean meal if we want to export meal, which is what we're going to have to do.
And speaking of Argentina, of course, we've been hearing about an insect issue that's caused disease in the corn crop there. How much of a problem do we think it is?
Well, there was an estimate that came out this morning from Dr. Michael Cordonier, who I respect. He's a very good agronomist. He doesn't really trade the market. He's more just tell us the facts on the ground. And he lowered his Argentine corn crop from 53 million metric tons down to 50 million metric tons. So I think there's a legitimate concern there. I guess from Argentine's point of view, the disease hit relatively late in their growing cycle. 20% of the corn's already been harvested down there. So it may not be a full-fledged disaster, but still 3 million metric tons off of 53 million. That's what is that? That's 6%. So every little bit helps, I guess, helps the price because that's going to be that much less that they're going to have available.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
The one thing, I guess, their basis contracts, peat farmers that have basis contracts versus the May will have to be rolled by the end of the month. Typically, farmers wait to the last day to roll. That's not always the right thing to do. That May-July corn spread has been trading anywhere between 10 and 15 cents. Over the last month, it's currently trading just outside of 11. So, farmers don't have to wait to the last minute. You can roll those basis contracts now if you're not planning on pricing it, which I don't think many farmers are. So keep an eye on that May-July corn spread and get your offers in to get that rolled. You don't have to wait till the very last day, I guess.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon.
I'm
Emerson Nafziger is here. He's emeritus agronomist for U of I. Hi, Emerson. Thank you for being with us. You and Gio Prezafontes posted an article to the Crop Central website related to nitrogen, particularly anhydrous ammonia. There's been some thought in the farm community that the warmer than average temperatures, particularly in March and across the wintertime, have caused a lot of leaching of nitrogen. Do you think that's the case?
Well, we always get concerned about what happens to the nitrogen we put out down last fall. And this last year, we put a lot down, and so there's a lot of concern. And the price of nitrogen versus the price of corn, that ratio is skewing towards lower nitrogen rates this year if we follow the MRTN approach. And so the big question always is, should we think about maybe putting more on? One thing we have learned over the years is that it's really difficult to go out to a field and actually measure what's there in a way that's meaningful. We see nitrogen in the soil generally go up from 1st of April to the middle or end of May, and that's primarily because the soil is warming up. So whether we put it on last fall or not, whether there's any nitrogen on there, the nitrogen content that we can recover sampling the soil tends to go up. So we're not there yet, but we went back to some data we had, and we had four fairly different fall-winter seasons. This started in before the 2015, 16, 17, and 18 seasons. And then in the spring, we took nitrogen samples in April and May, sort of as a run-up to when the crop really starts to take up nitrogen, which isn't until about the 1st of June or so most years. And that gave us some pretty good comfort. We had very different winters. One was warm and wet. I think that was the winter of 2015-2016. And yet 2016 had very high nitrogen levels. Well, high, I say, above 200 pounds when we'd put 200 pounds on in the fall. The other part of that study, we'd put 200 in the fall with N-SERB. We put 200 in the spring without N-SERB. We sampled them both, and we never did see much difference between them. Over those 16 site years, I think our average difference in corn yield between fall and spring applied nitrogen was less than a bushel per acre. So we do know that warm, wet conditions are good for denitrification. It's just that denitrification is a phenomenon in more poorly drained soils or poorly drained parts of fields where water stands and they get saturated. And that's when the microbes that like saturated conditions can go to town and sort of denitrify or convert it back to nitrogen gas. We think that's very rare. Remember that our winter up to this last few weeks has been considerably drier than normal. Its temperature was above normal, but when the soil is relatively dry, we don't worry very much about any form of nitrogen loss. And our tiles were not running very vigorously through the winter, if at all. And this last rainfall is going to trigger some tile flow. But, you know, our time when we really worry about nitrogen loss by denitrification, saturated soils, is basically in June, when the soils are warm enough for that biological process to take place. So I think we can relax about it. We'll sort of keep watching it. If we get conditions in June that are like the conditions in 2015 were, where it rained 10 inches in the month, then we might revisit this. But I think for right now, we can count on that nitrogen from last fall being there, and just proceed accordingly.
Emerson Nafziger is an Extension Agronomist Emeritus for the University of Illinois. I spoke with him about nitrogen that had overwintered and whether the warm conditions caused an issue related to the ability of that nitrogen to stay in place. His short answer is probably not. Thank you. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. Thank you for being with us. It's warm. The tractors here are moving. There has been rainfall across a portion of the Midwest. Can you tell me a little bit about that first, please?
Yeah, you know, the moisture we picked up here in the last 24 hours and that which really came on in the past week, has all been really very good for a big part of the region. Our soil moisture situation is looking pretty darn good. There's very few areas out there that are critically dry. Now, we were running pretty low on moisture out there in the Western Corn Belt before yesterday's rain event occurred in Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and neighboring areas of Missouri and Nebraska. And the moisture wasn't a big heavy soaker necessarily, but it did help to moisten up the ground. And so we're in a really good scenario right now. Yes, there are a few fields that are a little too wet in the eastern and lower parts of the Midwest, and certainly the Delta has need for more drier weather. But when you stop and step back and think about the fact it's only April the 16th or 17th, I guess it is, you know, this is not a bad place to be if you're just needing a little bit less precipitation and warmer temperature. So it's really a good environment right now.
Have you looked back over the years to see if there are any years that look like this one where we had this dry condition to begin with and then began to get rainfall?
Yes, I have actually, and I've just completed some of the study on that just earlier this morning. We have been seeing some similarity to 2006 over the past few months. I first noticed this in December, and really each of the months since that time, we have seen at least half to two-thirds of the country having a very similar signature on the precipitation and or temperatures to that of 2006. And, you know, prior to this week's rain event in the Western Corn Belt, I was a little concerned that, well, we have seen the end of that parallel because we really weren't doing a very good job following 2006 earlier this month. But with the rain event that was focused on Minnesota and Iowa, South Dakota, parts of Nebraska and Missouri in this last 24 to 48 hours, we have managed to put a moisture surplus into the picture, and that was the same situation in 2006 once again. So we do have an ongoing parallel in the heart of the crop area of the U.S. with that year. And so this morning I went back and I stopped to look at the state yields going back to 2006, and I was amazed at how good our production was that year. And nationwide, it was a good year. We were close to trend yield, maybe a little bit above it in some states, but it was pretty good. I didn't find very many locations that had a big problem. So I know that's not necessarily good news because there's so many of us out there that need to see higher market prices. But before we just totally depress everybody and walk away, let me point out a couple of other things. And we've talked about this on the show before, and that is that some of the other years that we've been looking at that are a part of this long-term cycle that we're in do include some pretty drier biased years like 1988 and 1952 and 1934. They're all part of the same cyclical pattern we're in. 2006 is a member of that as well, but 2006 was apparently one of the better years out of that series.
You don't say.
Yeah. And, you know, it's possible, it's just possible that we might be able to get a little bit more of a stressful situation out of this. You know, one of the other studies we did is we went back and we looked at the temperature extremes in each of these summers that were part of the cycle. And we found that out of 6 years, five out of the six of them recorded a higher number of 100 degree days relative to the average summer. And that was for Western Corn Belt locations and the plains. And so that was one of the things that kind of at least disturbed me a little bit earlier on, that we might indeed have a little bit more stress in the region. And a couple other things to keep in mind, if you're looking for hope for higher prices because of a little more of a crop problem this year, we do still have the negative phase of Pacific Decadal Oscillation playing out. That reinforces ridginess in the middle of North America. And of course, we've got this La Nina potential that's lurking on the horizon. And if we can get La Nina to develop very quickly, we can help to reinforce all of this ridge possibility in the middle of the country. And so we may just sway away from the 2006 parallel and look at these other years that were a little bit more stressful. So I wouldn't want anybody listening today to say, oh, Drew says it's going to be 2006 and we've got this good yielding year coming up. I'm not convinced of that. I just find it interesting that we have been seeing a lot of similarities to 2006 up until now.
Very quickly, the forecast for the next week here in the Midwest?
Yeah, we are going to see cooler temperatures come back into play. So we're going to conserve our moisture out there. We've got one more storm system after the one that's out there today that will come through, and that will likely take place as we go from Thursday into Friday. It's a real quickie. But it does get followed by a lot of cold air. So we'll see a lot of wind and drier air and colder air as we finish out the week and move into the weekend. We'll try to warm back up a little bit next week. We get a little reinforcing shot of cooler air. We'll get a few showers around, but no big heavy soaking of moisture. And another little disturbance that'll do the same thing at the end of next week. So it really, the bottom line is we're probably not going to see high volumes of moisture for a while, but we will have some milder temperatures that will conserve our moisture. So there will be potential to get into the fields here, and we should be able to get some work done. It's not going to be perfect, but it never is, right?
It never is. Should we follow up on the wheat crop in Russia?
Yes, that's being talked about a lot these last few days. In fact, my phone's ringing a little bit more about that. The topsoil, it continues to firm up in Russia's southern region, as well as eastern parts of Ukraine, about the eastern one-third, maybe one-fourth to one-third of that country. And Kazakhstan, all these areas are being dominated by a high-pressure ridge aloft right now. And that ridge will stay with us for almost 10 days. And so we'll see additional dry and warm bias conditions through that period. At the end of that period of time, the ridge looks like it will temporarily break down. Now, the thing that you need to keep in mind is that this ridge is a classic El Nino to La Nina ridge that shows up in Russia almost every time when we're in this situation where we go from an El Nino early in the year to La Nina later on. And because the jet stream is so strong right now, the ridge can't lock into place. But as the ridge, as the jet stream slows down, as we go deeper into spring and early summer, the ridge will return and it will probably be more of a persistent feature. So right now, conditions in Russia are still pretty good, but there is definitely potential that we may see some dryness and some heat over there as we get into May and June, July.
Hey, thanks much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world, online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to listen to anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website or hit the podcast tab and subscribe to the podcast, including the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. Or you can look them up in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, and so many more. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.